Welcome back to 94.7 The Pulse. We've gone from the zany Brian Nankervis to a subject a little more serious. In fact, it's very bloody serious at the moment because it's causing great frustration, annoyance and angst, but it's an important part of our life. It affects each and every one of us. It's called politics, and you can't avoid it. You might not like it, but you can't avoid it, and you need to be armed at the ballot box, armed carefully, and Sue Barrett comes on regularly to help us do that. Sue, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, listeners.
Yeah, fantastic to have you back. And I was just saying off air, be fun to be a satirist in this day and age because there's never any shortage of material. We got another dose last night with the Speaker of the House suggesting that Mr. Christian Porter may have some explaining to do, but his party's rallied round behind him, put up the protective shield, and again, he doesn't have to explain to the general public why $1 million just suddenly landed in his secretly in his bank account to help pay some legal bills. Another messy look.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the more they try to hide it, the more curious we all get about there is something really to hide, isn't there?
So, yeah.
I just think that this is the first time what the government did yesterday, the first time it's ever happened in the entire history of our parliamentary system. So it's unprecedented. And if you look at people's...
Ooh, we just lost you again, Sue.
Sorry, if you look at people's reactions to that in media and social media, you'll see that everyone pretty much is aghast and disgusted with what happened yesterday to the Speaker.
It's almost now there's no shame at all with what is happening in federal parliament. It was almost as if it was done purposely as a blind to stop the nonsense that's going on in the Nationals and the Liberal parties that are supposed to be a coalition and seem to almost be working in opposition to each other. Another bizarre week in Canberra. How do you think that will play out? But well, I mean, you've got to have a cynical view, but you've had a bit of experience watching it. How do you think that'll play out this week?
I think that the message is basically sends to the rest of us. You know,
so we just start losing you. You're crackling up a bit. I'm not quite sure whether it's a movement situation or the phone.
Is that okay now?
That's better, yep.
Okay, I'll just stay still. I won't move, promise.
Okay.
I think what's really... the message that this messiness, this lack of clarity and lack of stewardship and lack of strategy and lack of policy and lack of plans that the current federal government, the coalition, is showing us is that they're nothing but, they're not a coalition, they're actually fighting with each other, and that message it sends to the rest of us is that they have absolutely no idea about what they're doing moving forward. And we are at a tipping point in the world, on the world stage. We have so many things coalescing at the moment, from, you know, handling the pandemic to crisis, you know, a climate action requirement. And, of course, what we're seeing on full display is a complete lack of integrity and ethics and moral code in our current federal political system. And that sends a strong message to all of us that they don't even know what they're doing by the looks of it. And
yeah.
We need something to change dramatically and fast.
Now, this is a bittersweet situation for you, because coupled with the appalling recent goings on in the state Labor Party, which has tentacles attached to Canberra as well through Andrew Byrne, the two party, and we'll chuck in the coalition system at the moment, is very frustrating. But in another sense, while you're driving hard to push the independent voices of campaign, this sort of stuff just keeps giving you more and more evidence as to why your cause for pushing forward candidates who are emotionally attached to their constituents is actually working in your favour despite the frustration of it.
Oh, I do think so. The thing we've got to do is, when we're looking at this fiasco, basically, what we've got to do is give people alternative choices that are actually going to help reset and reposition what good politics should look like in this country. As far as the ICAC and IBAC scenarios are concerned in the Victorian and New South Wales states, at least we've got them, and at least they're holding people to account for their actions, or at least putting them through a process to see should they be held account and prosecuted for their actions. What we don't have at a federal level is anything of that nature. We've just got lots of broken promises from the current federal government. And given the hiding of Christian Porter's $1 million and where it came from, it goes to show you that they have no intention of putting a National Integrity Commission together, because goodness knows what would happen if it actually was put together, which we hope it will be, with hopefully a change in government to bring that about. We would see actually a lot of these people being held to account for their actions, which are basically, some of them criminal in nature, but definitely unethical and immoral in nature.
One of the issues around selection of a candidate, there's probably plenty of people around who are connected to their community and would make ideal candidates, but what we do know in the murky world of politics that anyone who pops their head up and looks like a threat, both major parties would be doing a fair bit of digging behind the scenes to find any little crack in the armour of a potential candidate who would put pressure on an incumbent member. For that procedure, I suppose the independent groups that you're on, they've got to be very strong in selecting the candidate to make sure that anything that is untoward in the history of the person's life can be counted in some way, or at least explained. Because there's no doubt it's going to be found and brought to the attention, isn't it?
Of course, and this is where, how ironic, that they would be doing backgrounding, potential candidates where they themselves definitely, you just only have to sort of lift a thin veil and can find a whole myriad of awful, criteria that many of them would actually, would have in their backgrounds as well. The point being is that I'm actually the chair of the selection, the candidate selection committee for Voices of Goldstone. So we've actually put together a very robust selection process. And you're absolutely right. People, we've got to scrutinise where people are coming from, what will likely happen. We've got to do consequence planning around the very things that you mentioned. But I'm really glad to say that the people we've been speaking to, no one's picture perfect. So no one's going to come with picture, perfection. But we've got really solid people, putting their hands up to take on the mantle. What we did before we even started the selection process is we actually consulted with our community, our constituents, and asked them what they wanted in terms of, core characteristics and capabilities to be able to then, that we could then anchor, our candidate selection process to. And we actually came up with 10 criteria, and I'm happy to go through them if you wish, but it gave us a really good indication about what people wanted in their politicians, and that's what we've then been selecting too. So there are things like we wanted them to have independence because of the rot in the political parties. We felt that being independent and not politically aligned to any major party would give them a freedom to be able to represent us. We also, of course, wanted them to be residing somewhere in or near Goldstone, because that would have lived experience of our community. We want them to be community-minded, so they actually are engaging with our community. They're listening and acting on the concerns of their electorate. Centre to this is ethics and behaviour. We already established values and behaviours and principles that we outline in our Goldstone standard, and we wanted them to be able to act accordingly with that in their public life. We also needed them to have, broad grounding and credibility, educational, life, business or academic or professional experience that they can bring, depth and substance to being able to make informed decisions and take action. And then we looked at their interpersonal skills, that they had been a respected leader, they were consensus builders, they were good at networking and engaging, and that then brought on communication skills, they were proficient and, able to succinctly present themselves and communicate. Probity, speaking of integrity commissions, that they had a high ethical standards, no criminal record, and also, their social media activities were above board. They also had to have a grasp of the Australian parliamentary system, and of course, this is to depreciate a resilience of character to be able to withstand the pressures and to prioritise, and to be able to prioritise conflicting demands and withstand the rigours of public scrutiny. So it's not for the faint-hearted, is it?
No, it isn't indeed. And then in amongst all that, there's the little things that can be made into big things, and it may be that there was evidence of having smoked marijuana as a teenager, or there may have been a failed marriage early in life. These tiny things that someone in the major political party would try and use to discredit that person's character. Do you need to do with it without wanting to use that terrible terminology of backgrounding? But is there an element of backgrounding even behind those 8 or 10 characteristic requirements that you've just read out?
Well, we are working with people to unpack all of that, and they go through a very rigorous selection process which helps unfurl and uncover anything there. And it also helps the person involved or people involved make informed decisions about whether or not they want to take this further or not. It's a really big decision. The worst thing, though, is that women come under far more scrutiny than men in this process, and those things that you mentioned are held like weapons to the throats of women. I watched the Four Corners report last night. I watched the replay of it, that Angela Merkel and her outstanding career as a politician, but also as the Chancellor of Germany. And she was very strong on her ethics and moral standing. But once she started to get into the spotlight of becoming a politician, because she's very androgynous in the sense that she doesn't care about being a woman, or a man. She's there as a human, which I ascribe to as well. But even in Germany, she was put through the ringer about what she wore or being a woman, and she was given far more scrutiny just because she was a woman. So tell me that's fair, it's really ridiculous that we expect high standards from our politicians, yet people try to bring them down for all sorts of absurdities.
Yeah, we certainly saw that in our own country just over a decade ago with what Julia Gillard had to go through. At the time, it just seemed like normal part of the political system. But when all that stuff has been replayed recently and her famous speech in Parliament and the acts around that, it was an appalling situation in such a relatively small time ago. I hope we don't see it again, but I'm not confident. I did read recently that after Grace Tame had sort of taken it back up to the Prime Minister after almost tried to publicly belittle her, he organised an investigation into how she was chosen to be Australian of the Year. Well, I thought that was pretty obvious why she was chosen. She's an outstanding campaigner on a very serious social issue, but even then she was still seemingly being undermined because she'd had the temerity to stand up to officialdom.
Well, not just officialdom, stand up to misogyny and power games of a few who don't like being exposed. That's what it's about, which is why it doesn't surprise me that, all the work we've been doing in our local community, people are wanting action on, climate, integrity in politics and equality for women. So this is all about power and, control. And when people are in high positions, when their status and power is threatened, they'll start to act wildly and they'll start to try and lash out and bring down people that are coming with very solid, reasonable cases. And rightly so, we need these things addressed for us to have healthier, more prosperous and stable democracies and societies.
And we saw it unfold again last night too with when Christian Porter under attack, Peter Dutton, has brought Sarah Hanson-Young into it, suggesting her GoFundMe campaign to raise money for her legal case was the same as Christian Porter's. The difference, of course, being that Sarah Hanson-Young has produced the name and address of everyone that made a donation as opposed to the blind trust that's tucked away. So already it's turned around and again it seems a woman is a soft target.
Well, and look, yes, we can be a soft target, but we're not taking it. We're not going to lie down and take it. We're just going to stand up. And sunlight is a really great sanitizer, okay? So we want sunlight on all of this. And we're going to keep working towards it. And we need bravery and courage and substance and good, solid morals and ethics and standards to abide by. And we're not asked... this is what good politics is about, having these standards and governance protocols in place. not a free-for-all and, you know, serve your mates and just, you know, strip mine, you know, the population of their hard-earned tax dollars to fund your mates. This is what's ultimately happening. The level of corruption in this country has gone, it's gone over the top. You only have to look at that big deal documentary.
Yeah, I haven't seen all of it yet, but I saw the last 10 minutes and that was appalling enough, but I'm going to catch up with it over the weekend.
So there's a lot of good news out there, as in well-crafted, well-documented, good information that actually can help people make more informed decisions. And this is where I think that, you know, life is more than just showing up, right? More than just showing up and turning up to work or, you know, being in a family or voting at the ballot. What we have to do is get a good grip on what's actually going on around us and what's going to happen to us when people in charge are making decisions on our behalf. I don't think we can sit back any longer with the threat of climate change, the lack of integrity in current federal politics, and the state of women in terms of our decline from 12th to 70th in terms of equality and participation. We have got to fight for these things and work for these things. Now, I know it's kind of, I find it always really interesting when I speak with you, Rob, because I'm not a political person. I don't belong to any political party. But I'm proud myself here as kind of, you know, Sue Citizen, having a conversation with you, because I decided that I can't stand what's going on and I'm trying to educate myself and inform myself about what on earth is happening to our society and our democracy and our country. Because we have the best opportunity to be the most amazing country, you know, in the world in terms of a renewable clean energy, you know, a country. We can be, you know, we've got great multiculturalism, we've got incredible talent and capability. A lot of the carbon, you know, the decarbonising technology that's being used around the world, guess what country it's been invented in?
Yep.
But we have got an amazing array of things, but without good stewardship, leadership, good policies in place at a federal level, you know, that really slows everything down. But thank goodness for the state governments. They've already got a lot of things in place, like, you know, whether it's their ICAC, IBAC, but they've got, you know, net zero emissions targets in place. They're doing the heavy lifting, like they actually did in the COVID pandemic as well. So, you know, our current state governments are pretty much doing a lot of the heavy lifting for us, but we're lacking sorely at a federal level. And you almost question, why do we need a federal government if they're doing so little to help create our sustainable future for all?
So you must be somewhat bored, as I am. I had not heard of the Voices of Campaign in your electorate, let alone any electorate, until I first spoke to you, and it wasn't on that subject. It was a different subject that alerted me to make the connection to you, and then since then Voices of has come into our conversation. But I'm hearing about it from so many different places, through media and media, both television and newspaper, about the Voices of type model being brought into place at so many other places and targeting so many key government and opposition politicians who have probably not displayed the actions of a good member of a parliament. You must be really bored that people must be starting to change the way they're thinking. So what you and I are talking about now, instead of being brushed off as nonsense and not a fit, I think more people are taking it seriously, and there could be a groundswell.
Well, we're hoping so. There's a real movement happening. At last count, there's over 40 of Voices of Communities or Voices for Communities around the country. We're not a party system. They're just independent community-based candidates or community-based groups that some are looking to put up community independent candidates up at the next federal election, okay? Not all 40-plus are doing that, but a number of them are. But what it is doing is it's reconnecting people in community back with democracy and what is good representative democracy, what we actually, how we can have a say, how our voices can be heard, and how we can affect positive change. I mean, the overwhelming number of Australians want action on climate, right? So, but it's not happening at a federal level. But so where are our voices heard? Well, this is why I think you're seeing a groundswell, for example, with these community, voices of groups emerging. And with the, as much as we can say social media is terrible on many levels, it's also really great because it connects communities very quickly, very fast, in terms of being able to share good information, good intelligence, and help people rise up to be able to actually have their voices heard. Because that's what democracy is. It's for the people and by the people. It's not for these, people, in political parties who are, serving vested interests rather than actually serving their constituents and their best interests.
Yeah, certainly the ABC program, what was it called? New Deal, Raw Deal, Old Deal, or something on Tuesday night.
Big Deal.
Big Deal, yeah. I'm looking forward to catching up with that. But that's a really good example of what goes on behind the scenes. What has now become normal in our political system that a lot of people would not be aware of? And it's important that you do. I keep saying, at the end of the day, I don't care who you vote for. Just be able to explain exactly why you are voting for, the goods and bads about the person you are voting for, and look at alternatives, because there are alternatives. You may have some rusted on views about where your politics lies, but if you really scrutinise all potential candidates and what they stand for, you might find that you are better represented somewhere else if you really do your homework, and we need to do more of it. And you're right about social media. It's a very good and bad tool in getting information out, but of course, as we lead up to an election, a lot of that information won't necessarily be correct, Sue.
No, exactly. That's right. What we've got to do is peel back the labels, all right? The label may not... What's under the label may have changed dramatically to what you used to think the label stood for. So that's why you must peel back the labels. You must look at what they really stand for. You can look up people's, you can look up federal politicians' voting records to see what they actually voted for on theyvoteforyou, I think, .org.au. Type in "they vote for you" and you'll find it on the internet. And you can then look up your local member and you can actually see what they actually voted for. Not what rhetoric they might tell you publicly, but what they actually voted for. And you might be quite surprised, if not shocked, that what they say in public or on social media or in radio or TV or media interviews is not how they actually act in real life. And I think that's what's really important. We have to stop just taking things at face value. And you only have to peel back the label and you'll see that what you're buying may not be what you want to actually, purchase or have represent you in the future.
And that's certainly very relevant at the moment, Sue, with the debate in Canberra amongst the coalition parties around climate change and action on it, because there's a lot of talk at the moment about what Australia will take as a collective to Glasgow, but if you look back historically at what those same members of parliament have voted for, and it doesn't match the rhetoric. So there is a real live example of exactly what you're talking about.
Well, we're currently in my business, we produce a trends report every year, and this year it's all about how to decarbonise sales teams and operations and businesses, because we have to act now. Basically, we've got to be able to get ourselves in a good place, not by 2050, but by 2035. And I have a science background, and there's a lot more clever people than me out there with lots of information and business information that tells us if we do not act now and actually decarbonise what we're doing, we won't have an inhabitable world to live in. And so we must make sure this happens. Imagine these bushfires that we had in 2019-2020 happening regularly all over the world, and floods and all sorts of stuff just being a standard operating procedure of how we live. We don't want that, but we can reverse it if we act now. And so that's why this whole thing about what the federal government's doing, it's just window dressing. They have got no idea, and they want to basically pork barrel us by giving lots of money to people just to, get their whatever deal across the line. I can't tell you, Rob, I wake up every morning feeling a sense of rage about this. Absolute rage.
Yeah, I'm the same, and what I'm trying to do in just general conversation with people, friends, family, whatever, on this subject, if if a method hasn't been working, maybe it's our fault of how the message has been delivered or others. You're in a position of influence in your business. Have you found by tinkering with how you say something that the message would resonate better? Because climate change has been an issue since 1987, and we've still got people who are totally uneducated on the subject. So maybe the message we're trying to deliver isn't delivered properly.
Well, this is the thing, you know, it's not what you say, it's what they do with what you say that's the most important thing. And I think this is such a huge issue. It's really complex. It's very hard to make it easily accessible to, you know, regular humans, if you like. This is one of the reasons why we're putting together a very practical report this year for 2022 about what can you do to start decarbonising. There's lots of information. The good news is we have everything at our fingertips now to make all of this work. We don't have to invent anything new. We've got everything we can do. We just need people to come together and actually work in a coordinated way to actually make this happen, or at least enough people to come together. Like sort of getting vaccinated, you know, there's those who'll be the anti-vaxxers or whatever, but most of us know that getting vaccinated is the right thing to do and the best thing to do. We need to harness the energy of those people, because we imagine a future where we're all powered by the sun and the wind and the water, and everything in nature has been actually restored. We can actually live like that, I mean, but we need to be able to have it sorted and organised by 2035.
Yes, it's going to be very important the next 2 weeks in Australia, but then more importantly, what comes out of Glasgow, because we know the politics in Australia, but we don't know what's happening elsewhere. We seem to have more determination coming from other countries and some key countries at that, but whether that's also rhetoric, we need to see some pretty clear action come out of Glasgow, and then Australia will be forced to toe the line, or there will be serious financial consequences, I would imagine.
And you've raised the most important point. I know this sounds terribly kind of, you know, I don't know, binary, whatever, but money. Show me the money. That's what we have to be able to do, is show people how there's going to be enormous amounts of opportunity and good money to be earned and invested in with a clean energy future. And this is the thing. There are a lot of good business cases out there about that. They've just got to get airtime. But with the mainstream media that's not been showing that, at least not visibly enough for people to actually anchor their business strategies and investment opportunities to, it makes it very, very difficult. But look, there are a lot of great people out there, and I think this is what I want to let people know, is despite the inaction and ineptitude of the current federal government, look to industry leaders, look to investment funds, look to, you know, your local communities. People are doing something and we are making it work. I mean, Australia has the highest uptake of rooftop solar in the world. So we've already demonstrated some leadership in this space. If we adopted the California electric car policies and things, we could really ramp it up. And then if we adopted what Germany is doing about heating and cooling their homes using renewables, boy, imagine the world with those three things. We could drop carbon emissions very, very quickly. And so we've got everything we need. I think it's just about us making sure we just don't sit back and let others lead. We need to be active participants in our democracy, in who we vote for, in how we work, in how we engage with each other, because we have the opportunity to be the world leaders, Australia, that is, in renewable energy, in agricultural technology, in healthcare, and also in multiculturalism and creating healthy democracies. And that's what I fight for every single day. So that's how I fuel my rage.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. I think one of the things we simply need to change, and we're getting from government, all we're hearing about is what we'll lose by making the change. There's been no discussion about what we'll gain. But the business leaders, as you said, they've seen it and they're already running with it. They're miles in front of the government waiting for direction, and that gives me a lot of confidence that we're moving in the right direction, albeit slowly. But I think Glasgow might put the foot on the accelerator a little bit.
Yeah, it's going to accelerate it, exactly. And the thing is that if Australia does not ascribe to these things, then other countries will actually have carbon border taxes. The European Union's already doing that. The US will be doing that. we will not be able to trade with most of the world that we want to trade with if we don't do this. So back to the money card. If we don't do this, then we will not be able to be the international global player that we want to be and can be. So I don't care how it comes about in that sense. If that's what motivates people, not the moral case or the ethical case or even the environmental case, if it's the money case, I don't care, but we've got to take action.
Sue, you're a star. Keep up the good fight. We'll have you back regularly. I'm keen to follow this Voices of campaign that you're running personally in your own electorate, but follow it around the countryside. As you said, there's about 40 tapping into the model without actually being coordinated and joined to, for anyone to say, well, it's another party brewing. It's not that. It's a community working to get correct representation, and all power to that. Thank you again for your time. We'll be in touch, no doubt. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no, thanks, Rob, and thanks to your listeners. And, get out there and create the change. We can do it. Take care.
Excellent. Sue Barrett, driving a very, very good community message from, clearly from the heart. The passion is oozing out. And I love that. So we'll continue to tap in to Sue and get more information. But again, I keep saying just arm yourselves with as much information as you can. If someone puts up something glossy on Facebook or a newspaper article, just peel it back a little bit, have a look. And that's both sides of the argument. Don't for one think that only one side is putting out all the false information. I've found that there's extremes working on both sides of this argument, extreme comment. Just peel it all back and find it in the middle. But what we do know is we do have to make some sort of change. And if that's not coming from the person that's currently representing you in council, parliament, you, with the power of the vote, have something, a chance to do about it. So continue to educate yourself, listen to lots of voices, do your own research, and come up with your own opinion. It's very important to do.